Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. We are actually discussing several suttas which we can get some insights towards our practice. So I have selected Mahasatipatthana Sutta as the next our topic because it is extremely relevant to our practice, and this is based on this, actually, we are continuing our complete practice. So this is, therefore, we can say as the complete skeleton of our practice, whole foundation of our practice. So therefore, Satipatthana Sutta is very relevant to our practice. So therefore, I have taken it for a fair amount of discussion. Now, as you know, Satipatthana Sutta is available at several places. In Majjhima Nikaya, there is Satipatthana Sutta, and again in Diga Nikaya there is Satipatthana Sutta, where only difference is that Diga Nikaya one has certain only that what you call this Satcha Pabba in a little longer version. So I'll explain these things later. So therefore, if we consider the Satipatthana Sutta itself, there are two places it is available. One in Majjhima Nikaya and another one in Diga Nikaya. That is the middle length discourses as well as in the long discourses. And on the other hand, there are many Satipatthana related suttas altogether collected and put it into Sanyukta Nikaya. And it is called Satipatthana Sanyukta. So therefore we can see the Satipatthana is a sort of a common subject. And there are many places Satipatthana being referred, and there are many monks who have discussed with others in praise of Satipatthana. So therefore it has become a sort of a core teaching of the Buddha. There are other times where when Buddha thought of teaching Satipatthana, that's another sutta called Brahma Sutta. Available in Satipatthana Sanyukta, there is one Brahma called Sahampati. So he immediately come in front of the Buddha and he praised the Buddha, telling that it is not only you, Bhante, that there is previous Buddhas also have selected Satipatthana as the path to purification. So therefore, it is not unique to our Buddha, the Gautama Buddha, but even to previous Buddhas, Satipatthana has become one of their core teachings. With that little sort of an introduction, we can get on to the sutta. At this point, Buddha was staying at Kuru. There's a Kuru is one of the country in a kind of another region in India, and there's a Kammasa Dhamma is the one of their cities. And Buddha was staying with the Sangha at this Kammasa Dhamma, the city of Kammasa Dhamma. There Buddha is taking the subject. There is no any specific reason. Buddha himself has taken the subject. And there Buddha wants to discuss this sutta or to teach the Satipatthana to the monks. So he is taking himself the topic and asks monks to pay attention. And he started with Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo sattanang visuddhiya. Soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya, dukkha domanassanang atthangamaya, nyayassa adhigamaya, nibbanassa sacchikiriyaya, yadidang chattaro satipatthana. So this is the sort of preamble given to Satipatthana, or preface given to Satipatthana, where Buddha is giving very strong benefits at the very beginning of the sutta. Ekayano. So Ekayano, the term Ekayano, we can say this is the direct path. So if we simply say this is the only path, then we are little exaggerating all Buddha's teachings, because Buddha has taught several other teachings or several other methods, strategies as well to attain Nibbana. But on the other hand, Ekayano we can refer as direct path, where there are no any other sideways or side tracks to go to various other things, but directly whoever the practicing Satipatthana will be directed towards a Nibbana. And therefore, if one wants to attain Nibbana, if one is ambitious to attain Nibbana, so this is the best method. So if one wants to attain, go to say heaven or any other thing, there may be various other techniques, but Satipatthana directly pointing towards Nibbana. So therefore, there's a sort of a unique features available in Satipatthana, and they are actually possible to understand. It is not difficult. When one is practicing Satipatthana, there are some very salient features in Satipatthana, which is we'll discuss as we move forward. Ekayano, so it's the direct path. Ayam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhya. So sattanam visuddhya basically means the purification of the beings. Now, why beings are to be purified? So basically we know this is not our first birth. So we have been in this samsara for long, long time. And as a result, we are born in hell realms, we are born in human realms, we are born in celestial realms, as well as in the Brahma realms. So we were actually wandering in this long samsara, and due to certain causes, especially due to ignorance, avijja, as well as due to the craving, tanha. So those two main factors become sort of the pivotal point of our wandering, main causes for our wandering. So on such situation, so we are very much like polluted and very much like conditioned, and as a result we are not in a position to be free from this long journey. And on the other hand, there are various we can say michadittis, wrong views people had, and even today they have, and they are trying to purify themselves using various other means. Say for example, burning fire from all four directions, and in the midday, during the noon, one is going to the middle position and the burning happens from the top as well, through the sun. So one is trying to burn one's defilements. So this is another technique people have used in old India. And again, sometimes they go to the Ganges and they swim there, or they simply wash themselves, and they thought they can purify themselves by washing through water. So this is another strategy they used, still they are using. So likewise, people thought that they have to purify the mind, they have to cleanse their mind, and they unknowingly have used various techniques. But Buddha deny all these vrata, all these ascetic practices, and he says that's a direct path. And direct path is nothing but the Satipatthana. And Sattanam Visuddhya basically means that the purification will happen, and it is not the purifying of the body, rather the purification of the mind. So if one's mind is purified, so then we can say he is a pure person, he is a noble person. Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikkamaya. So soka is the sorrow, Pariddhavanam is the lamentation. So sorrow and lamentation can be overcome. So we all may have various reasons to get sorrowful, various reasons to even to cry, to lament. And so if we practice Satipatthana properly, then we should ourselves experience sort of reduction of sorrow, reduction of lamentation, reduction of crying. So these are sort of verifiable benefits. It is not that limited to the book, but rather if we practice Satipatthana genuinely, then it should be capable of giving us or showing us all these benefits. So that is quite important, because it is not certain kind of a blind practice or based on blind faith. Rather, if we honestly practice, so we ourselves should feel the reduction of sorrow. We ourselves should feel there's a reduction of lamentation. Then dukkha domanassanam attangamaya. So dukkha is the various types of suffering. So this suffering has to be reduced. And again, there may be various resentments, resistance, reactions, and again anger, So those kind of some reactivity is available in the mind. So those also has to be reduced. So we ourselves can verify. So say you are practicing Satipatthana for 1 year. If, when compared to 1 year before, are you in a better position now? Are you in a fairly calm position now? Are you able to maintain your serenity, maintain your equanimity under any circumstance? So these are certain measures that we can take, we can consider. Therefore, Buddha, before the explanation of Satipatthana, he says these are the benefits. These are not anyway some mundane benefits. These are really strong benefits. And while telling this, he is actually taking sort of approach in the sutta. And then there's another term called Nyayasa Adhigamaya, where Buddha says one will understand the proper path. So what is this proper path? It is the, we can say it is the Noble Eightfold Path, the correct path, what is the, we can say the only path, and one will properly understand this only path to attain Nibbana. So it is not merely by books or hearing, rather through one's own practice. Suppose someone is practicing Satipatthana, so after some time, if he honestly did it, so he himself may understand the Noble Eightfold Path. He himself will understand, okay, there is a sort of a path to follow. There is a way of living. So that will be evident to him. So this is another benefit mentioned. Nibbanasa Satchikiriyaya, to realize Nibbana, to attain complete cessation, to attain complete understanding, enlightenment. So this is the sort of the direct path. Having said that, Buddha starts kind of a summary of the sutta telling Ida bhikkave bhikkhu kaye kayanupassi viharati atapi sampajano satima vinayaloke abhijja domanassam. Now in this sasana, in this very life, a monk, a practitioner, is living kaye kayanupassi. He is now trying to spend time looking his own body. Looking his body. So basically, kaye kayanupassi, the term kaye kayanupassi also has some importance. So we can learn about the body using many techniques. Say you can prefer an anatomy book, or you can ask from someone. You can see a video, you can see a movie which is describing about the body. You can refer any kind of a documentary. So there are many methods available to understand about the body. But here Kaye Kayanupassi emphasize that we ourselves have to pay attention to the body and to understand. So it's a direct experience. It is not some sort of a borrowed experience. It is not some sort of a inferential knowledge. Rather, we have to start with our direct knowledge. So this direct knowledge is something Buddha has praised. So there are various other methods to learn, as I mentioned, through the books, through the hearings, through the generations. So likewise, there are many other methods. But here, what is important is one to have the direct experience. So one may pay attention to the body, and as a result, one may get an understanding about the body. And not only that, the Satipatthana is sort of ordered in a way to go deeper. So starting with some basic establishment of mindfulness, and later taking us to more and more deeper levels of understanding. And then there are four qualities Buddha emphasized while practicing Satipatthana. These four qualities we have to keep in mind. So first quality is atapi. Atapi is, we can say, as the ardent or relentless effort. So we are never giving up, even though the say practice is difficult or practice doesn't bring us a quick results. Still, we are not giving up. Rather, we are continuing the practice. So therefore, effort has two sides, we can say. The first one is to maintain this effort for a long time. It is not just one day or one week that you practice satipatthana effortfully and then give up. Rather, you are having a courage, perseverance to maintain this practice for a long, long time. So it may be necessary. Like you can't expect a little plant to grow quickly. It may take even years to grow and give you fruits. So similarly, our mind also has to naturally grow, and as a result, we have to provide some time. What we need to have is this perseverance. What we need to have is this continuation of the practice. So that requires a fair amount of effort, energy, and that is mentioned as atapi. And on the other hand, there may be certain ups and downs in our way. There may be various obstacles coming on our way. So on such occasions, we should also have courage to face them. And if mind collapses, we should be able to again raise it up and again energize it and again to practice. So therefore, this atapi is sort of a quality expected from the practitioner. So the techniques mentioned hereafter does not basically specialize on that quality, but rather it's a kind of a common quality where we have to maintain it throughout the practice. So irrespective of whatever the techniques mentioned in Satipatthana Sutta, whenever we are practicing any of this technique, any of this method, any of this meditation technique, so we have to have this atapi. We have to have this effort. Sampajano, another quality. So janati basically means knowing. Sampajano basically says that it has to be some thorough knowledge. One has to have some penetrative knowledge. So therefore, establishing mindfulness alone is not enough. So one has to direct one's mind, direct one's attention, so that one may be able to clearly know what is really going on. So under our focus, under our attention, there may be various processes, phenomena, and what is really going on within themselves. So this is a kind of an investigation. This is a kind of a experiment that we are doing. So that kind of an attitude also has to be there. Sampajana. Satima. Satima is that we have to maintain continuous mindfulness. So we may be starting with some vague mindfulness, wavering mindfulness, but when we are continuing, slowly we should be able to develop mindfulness. We are slowly gaining momentum, gaining mindfulness, so that we ourselves may feel now that I am mindful. There may be certain times I was not mindful, but most of the time I am mindful. So likewise, you may have to feel it. You may yourself understand, okay, there's a quality called mindfulness, and I can feel it. I know what is mindfulness. It is not through the books, and it is not through someone else's information. Rather, you yourself has to develop it, and then only you know what is mindfulness. Satima. Vinaya loke abhijja domanassam. Now, another sort of a background Buddha mentioned here. What is the mindset one needs to maintain? So that mindset is basically free from any greed, craving, expecting results, or free from any resistance, free from any anger, free from any sort of a resentment. So therefore, kind of an equanimous attitude has to be maintained. So we can give a parable like sort of having a very accurate apparatus, having a very accurate, say, microscope for a specific task. Say, if your apparatus, if your microscope, if you are using for a particular task is erroneous, then you cannot expect proper results, accurate results. Similarly, before we are doing this noble experiment, so Buddha is telling us what are the prerequisites. So this is the sort of a background we have to maintain. Atapi, that we have to have effort. Sampajano, we have to have the attitude of investigation. We are a little curious about what is going on. We are examining what is under our nose. And then Satima, we are maintaining mindfulness at this very moment. Vinaya loke abhijja domanassam, we are trying to keep our mind in an equanimity, fairly equanimous mode. Not attached with anything, not resenting with anything, not rejecting anything. So we have a sort of an open attitude, very balanced attitude. Now he is observing the body by his own focused attention. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, Vedana asu vedana anupasse viharati, atapi sampajano satima vinaya loke abhijja domanasa. So one can recognize various feelings, and these various feelings, first of all, has to be one's own feelings. We'll use the term own just for easy communication. So there are various feelings arising within the body and inside one's mind, and one would be able to directly recognize them, directly understand those feelings. And the qualities mentioned for Kayanupassana is common here as well. Atapi, Sampajano, Satima, Vinaya Loke, Abhijja, Domanasang. So when you are observing pleasurable feelings, you should not get attached to it. When you are feeling, or you are going through some painful feelings, you should not resist them or have any resentment towards them. So you have to have a sort of a balanced attitude, balanced mind, equanimous mind. That is Vinaya Loke, Abhijja, Domanasang. And again, to continue this whole practice, not just one day, two day, maybe several months, several years, you may have to continue. So therefore you have this effort to continue. And sampajano, so you have to scrutinize. So you have to sort of scrutinize the process. So once your attention is drawn to somewhere, so you are carefully observing it, clearly knowing it. Satima, of course, mindfulness. And so these are the qualities that one needs to maintain even when one is doing Vedana Anupassana. Then Chitta Anupassana, similar. So one has to look at one's mind at this very moment, understanding directly about one's own mind. So we can refer a book, we can go to a psychology course, we can go to a teacher, we can ask about our mind. So we can get a sort of inferential knowledge about the mind. But that is not the important thing here. What is important here is to directly understand one's own mind at that very moment. Whenever a defilement arises, whenever a thought arises, even wholesome or unwholesome thought arises, at that very moment, one is well aware of it. So therefore, there's a direct experience given prominence. Similarly, Dhamme su dhamma anupassi viharati atapi sampajano satima vinaya loke abhijja domanassa. So one is referring various phenomena and trying to understand and directly knowing all these various phenomena arising at this very moment. So these are the sort of introduction, summary given for this sutta. Now if we consider the complete picture of Satipatthana, so there are four categories or four anupassana. For observations, establishment of mindfulness. One is Kayanupassana. Actually, it has 14 techniques. And if we refer Vedana Anupassana, it has, we can say, one technique, one method. Again, Chitta Anupassana, it has one method. And when it comes to Dhamma Anupassana, it has five methods. So we can say five streams. So now we'll get on to one by one so that we can cover all these techniques. So if we refer the first technique, that is nothing but Anapanasati. So most of you may already be familiar with Anapanasati. Actually, we have discussed this while in Kayagata Sati Sutta as well. But there's a significant difference as well when it comes to Kayanupassana, when it comes to Satipatthana Sutta. Because if you can remember Kayagata Sati Sutta, only the establishment of mindfulness is emphasized. But not the Satipatthana Bhavana, not the meditation aspect of it. But mostly the establishment of mindfulness, so that our mind may not wander.
It may stay as much as possible within the body. So that is the emphasis given in the Kaya Gata Sati Sutta. But in Satipatthana Sutta, going beyond that, establishment of mindfulness is the first step. Next step is the development of that mindfulness, refining that mindfulness, and to understand the nature of the phenomena. So I can go to the next page of this PDF, where there are three stages in proper mindfulness. Whole practice, we can say the complete Satipatthana analysis. So Buddha very clearly mentioned three stages. First stage is Satipatthana. First stage is the establishment of mindfulness. The next stage is the development of establishment of mindfulness. And that is called Satipatthana Bhavana. So once one establish mindfulness, so one has to examine what is under the scrutiny. One has to examine the phenomena. Suppose you are establishing mindfulness on breath. So mere establishment is not enough. One has to examine the breath. One has to investigate the behavior of the breath, various qualities of the breath. And then only one may understand the nature of the breath. So that is where the Satipatthana Bhavana is referred here. And then, as a result of this Satipatthana Bhavana, one may get various insights. There's a possibility of arising various insights. And more one's mind is sort of becoming wise and becoming sort of cleansed. So one may have an eagerness, one may have a tendency to maintain that clarity, to maintain that purity. So there, one has to change one's way of life, and one has to get on to a sort of a strategy so that one can further improve these insights, so that it becomes one's own, or to internalize these insights. So there one has to get on to a certain path, a complete methodology. So that is called Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminincha Patipada. So that is the patipada, that is the path. So all these three components are there for the complete mindfulness. Now if you refer typical Western mindfulness, the last two parts are very rarely mentioned. They give more emphasis to establishment of mindfulness, that is also important. But we need to know the complete picture. So these are the three components or three stages in this whole Satipatthana. First stage is to establish mindfulness, and second stage is to understand the behavior of the phenomena and to allow various insights to arise, and last is to internalize these insights, to own or to have these insights forever, for a long time. And in order to have that, in order to do that, one needs a strategy, one needs a path, a complete way of practice, and that is the third aspect. Okay, now we'll get into Anapanasati. So this is the first technique available in Kayanupassana. So Deva Buddha starts with Ida bhikkave bhikkhu aranya gatova, rukkamula gatova, sunyagara gatova, nisidati pallankam abhujitva. Ujumkayang panidhaya parimukhang sati upattapetva. So basically in Anapanasati, Buddha gives a sort of a background preparation, or he refers the environment, as well as he gives a sort of instructions about the posture. Aranya gatova, rukkamula gatova, sunyagara gatova. So basically one has to find a very quiet place, fairly free from any noise, and therefore if one is able to go to a forest, if one is able to go to a tree root, or if one is able to go to a empty place, so that would be much better. Because Anapanasati is a very refined object, so you need fair amount of clarity, fair amount of sensitivity in order to understand the breath. So therefore you need a fairly silenced place to start with. It may be true that later you can even practice at moderate conditions, but as much as possible in the beginning, it is better to have a fairly silent place. And then Buddha talks about the posture, nisidati pallankam abujitva ujunkayam panidhaya. So where one has to sit cross-legged and have a erect body. So you are keeping the upper half of the body erect, straight. So this actually facilitates the breathing process, because you know if your posture is sort of bent, then this passage of inhalation or this might be blocked. There may be certain blockages, certain obstacles for breathing. Therefore, Buddha first of all tell us the posture has to be proper. So he recommends the cross-legged posture. And anyway, if you are not in a position to sit cross-legged, it's all right to have a chair. But important that you are maintaining a straight posture so that the breathing is not hindered. Breathing is not blocked, rather breathing happens very naturally. Breathing is fairly facilitated. So, and another thing is, Buddha says, parimukhaṁ satiṁ upattapetva. One has to keep one's attention, keeps one's focus at the nostril. Because the breathing happens through the nose and we are keeping our attention closer to the nostril. Or we can say closer to the upper lip. And we are not following the breath inside as the inhale happens. And we are not following the breath outside when the exhale happens. Rather, we are trying to maintain our attention at the nostril. It's very much like a gatekeeper. Suppose there's a gatekeeper. So his job is at the gate. Whenever a visitor comes, he may check his identity or whatever it is. And then he either allows the visitor to go in or he denies the visitor to go in. He rejects. But his duty is basically is at the doorstep, at the gate. Similarly, suppose there is now coming someone from inside. Now he wants to go outside of the place. Now that is also allowed by the gatekeeper, and he is not following the person who is going outside. Rather, he maintains himself at the gate, at the doorstep. So therefore, the job of a gatekeeper is at the gate. He is not going inside, not going outside. He is fairly observing what is happening at the gate. Similarly, Buddha mentioned this sati, mindfulness, is like a gatekeeper. Sati dovariko bhikkave arya savako. So the noble person, this arya savaka, this practitioner, is using mindfulness as a dovarika, as a gatekeeper. And once he established mindfulness, then next step is sato asa sati, sato pasa sati. So he established mindfulness on breath. When in-breath happens, he know clearly this is in-breath. When out-breath happens, he know clearly this is out-breath. So he has to cultivate this now. Just knowing one breath, two breath is not enough. Just doing one day, two day is not enough. Rather, he is now continuing his practice. Every day, suppose he is maintaining a schedule, and there he is trying to keep one's attention on the breath. He tries to establish mindfulness on the breath. So breath itself is a refined object. So one needs certain attention, certain focus in order to catch the breath, in order to recognize the breath. Therefore, one's mind might wander at the beginning. So because this focus is not available at the beginning, so mind might wander towards the past, towards the future. So one's skill, one's task is to again and again bring back this attention. Whenever it is shifted to the past, one knows it. At that time, he slowly bring it back to the breath. Again, attention may be drifted to the future, daydreaming, fantasizing. Once he know that, he slowly stop it and come back to the breath. So you may have to do it 1,000 times because mind has not trained to be with the breath. So it's a breath itself is a very refined object, and again it's a very neutral object. It is not an exciting object. So therefore at the beginning it is very difficult because our mind like excitement. But there is nothing exciting here. So it is a sort of a neutral object, kind of a boring object. So that is where we need a lot of effort to not to give up, just to continue for a long time. So this relentless effort, athapi, is there. And sampajano, one needs to clearly know what is going on. So now in this breath, Buddha now recommends this sampajano, how one know the breath. So what are the characteristics one needs to know about the breath? It may be from which nostril the breath is coming in, from which nostril breath coming out, going out. Or is it long? Is it short? Is it warm? Or is it cool? So likewise, now the investigation starts. So this investigation is where the sampajano, now the practitioner, tries to know very clearly about the features of the breath, various characteristics of the breath. So that is also mentioned. Digangva asasanto digang asasamiti pajanati, digangva pasasanto digang pasasamiti pajanati, rasangva asasanto rasang asasamiti pajanati, rasangva pasasanto rasang pasasamiti pajanati. Either long, either short. So these characteristics one may know. So there's a simile given in the sutta. If there is a carpenter, he's having a saw, and he's using that saw, he's cutting a log. When he draws it long, he know that he is drawing it longer. When he is drawing it shorter, then he know that I am drawing short. He's keeping his attention at the cutting place, at the log, but he know very well I am cutting the log in long paces. I am cutting the log in short paces. So likewise, Buddha recommends us to keep our attention at the nostril and to know at this moment the breath happens either longer or either shorter. And remember that we are not purposely making the breath longer or shorter, but we are allowing the breath to happen naturally as the way it likes. And at that time we clearly know at this very moment whether it is short or whether it is long. And then if one is able to recognize this very clearly, that indicates one's attention has fairly improved, one's mindfulness has fairly improved, one is able to concentrate one's mind because the breath itself is fairly a refined object. Now Buddha requests us to further refine it in order to know various stages of the breath. Now this is not the stages of the complete in-breath, but even within the breath, within the inhalation, within the exhalation, there are various stages. So this inhalation does not immediately happen, but it is a sort of a gradual process. So it's very softly, very gently starts, and it reaches certain peak, certain threshold. And afterwards, it's calming down, it's fading away, and ultimately it disappears. And there's a little gap just before the beginning of the out-breath. And out-breath also very gradually starts, and then reaches the middle, and then fades away and completely disappears. And then again there's a gap. After that gap, the next inhalation or next in-breath begins. So likewise, there's a complete cycle. So Buddha requests us to see this complete cycle. Sabbakaya patisangedi asasisamiti sikkati. So if one is able to know like this, the complete in-breath, complete out-breath, and even the various little gaps, so that indicates one's attention has fairly grown and one can't do it without fair amount of restrainment. Because if you have any doubts, if you have any sort of, if you change your posture, if you put your hand too hard or you are trying to control it, you can't do it. Rather, you have to take the back seat. You have to observe very carefully what is going on. So all this requires fair amount of balancing, fair amount of restrainment. So the term sikkhati is important here because one is carefully observing the breath without wavering, without putting any doubt, without allowing mind to go to the past or future, completely establishing mindfulness on various phases of the breath. Now the beauty is that we may see various facets of the breath, various stages of the breath, and we can say it's very much like a Gaussian curve, where you have a beginning, you have a middle, you have an end. And again, then there's a gap, and then again there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end. So if we are properly practicing, so this the cycle become evident. But if we think logically, we might think more we practice, more and more characteristics may be visible and it may be endless. But there's a beautiful incident happen here. More we start to observe breath clearly, it is true that till certain stage the breath information, the details of the breath becomes more and more evident. But there is another stage reached where breath starts to calm down. Breath starts to fade away. So sometimes we can't believe it because we expect breath to be really vivid. Breath to become more, we are able to capture more and more details. But the beauty here is breath starts to calm down. And now you can't recognize the previous details. So you can't now recognize previous characteristics of the breath. And those characteristics become vague. Characteristics become blurred. And even you can't now recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath. Even that features or even those characteristics, how you distinguish in-breath and out-breath, even that can be disappeared. And only a kind of a very refined sensation may be only available, and you know that you are living, and that's all. So this stage we say pasambhayam kaya sankharam asasisamiti sikkhati. So where the calming down of the breath happens. Now Buddha mentioned, now actually all these refer to the first stage, establishment of mindfulness. And the second stage is the bhavana, where you are developing it, again and again cultivating this process, and now certain qualities of your mind are developing, and as a result you are able to recognize the behavior of the breath. You are able to understand the behavior of the breath, and you can understand there's a beginning for the breath and there's an end for the breath. Or there's a beginning for inhalation, there's an end for inhalation. There's a beginning for exhalation, there's an end for exhalation. And if you see closely, it may not be a single exhalation, it may be a series of exhalations. It may be a series of inhalations. Each minute inhalation, each minute exhalation also has a beginning, also has an end. So you may understand they have the nature to arise and pass away. They have the nature to come and go. They have the nature to happen and then disappear. So these are certain qualities that we are understanding because of our close observation. we are keeping a very quiet mind, fairly equanimous mind, fairly calm mind. And as a result of that, we are able to clearly know these common characteristics, common to in-breath, common to out-breath, and common to even to that subtle sensation. Once the in-breath and out-breath disappear, and it becomes a sort of a common sensation, just a knowing, even to that, this coming and going is common. This arising and passing away is common. Happening and disappearance is common. So Buddha mentioned that, telling samudaya dhamma anupassīvā kāyasmiṃ viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīvā kāyasmiṃ viharati, samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīvā kāyasmiṃ viharati. So one is able to know this arising and passing away nature of the breath. And later this breath become sort of converted or transferred into a sort of a very minute level sensation. Even there you can recognize these characteristics. And more you do this practice, you understand. So this arising and passing away nature is completely common to the whole body. It is not only unique to the breath. Breath actually represents a part of the broad body. The whole body has these characteristics. And inferentially you can know, even to the others, whoever the beings, whoever breathing, have the same nature. Something similar to yourself. Iti ajjattam va kaye kayanupassī vihirati, bahiddā va kaye kayanupassī vihirati. So if one do enough practice using one's own body, the insights arising, you can apply even to the outside. And you can inferentially know it is common to the others as well. Then more and more insights are possible. You understand this arising and passing away nature. And even you may be able to recognize certain causes, conditioning, causing this kind of physical process. And probably you may be able to even understand cause and effect relationship. So likewise, there are many potential insights are there. All are not mentioned here, but the sort of arising and passing away nature is mentioned here. And another insight is that you will understand atti kāyoti vā panassa sati pachupattitā hoti. Now, when you begin your practice, you are so and so. I am a man, I am a woman, I am a mother, I am a father, I am a child. So I am in this country, I am in that country. So there are so many perceptions, there are so many signs in your mind. Your mind is fairly conditioned. But more you practice, so all that external parameters are removed, external identification is removed, and your mind becomes fairly clear, very simplified, very refined. And with that refined mind, you will understand there is nothing but kind of a bodily process, kind of an ongoing process, kind of a causal process available in this body. And he is now using that bodily process to further enhance mindfulness, to further develop wisdom. Atti kāyoti vā panassa sati pacchupattitā hoti, yāvadeva jñānamattāya patissati mattāya. Now he wants to use this very body to further enhance mindfulness, to further enhance wisdom. And more one develops such wisdom, there may be a possibility of freedom of the mind. The mind may even relinquish this complete sensations, complete knowing of the breath, and mind can be completely free, not associating anything, not attaching with anything, not clinging to anything. And there may be such potential even in this practice. So Buddha refers that as anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadiyati. So the first glimpse of the freedom may be very short, may be momentary. One may not even notice it. But more and more one repeats this practice, one may be able to notice it. One may understand, okay, one when one reaches certain stage, when the momentum is built up, So mind becomes free. At that time, mind does not attach with anything. And so when one understands that, so one has to improve that. One has to cultivate that freedom. One has to enhance that freedom. One has to prolong that freedom. So how to prolong it? How to enhance it? How to have it even in the walking session? How to have it in every sitting session? How to have it even in day-to-day activities? So there you need a complete methodology. You need to have a fair strategy to sort of internalize this freedom. So that is where the Noble Eightfold Path come into the picture. So anissitocha viharati. So this viharati terms refers that one is abide by. So one is abide by the Noble Eightfold Path so that these insights become one's own. Or this freedom becomes very common to oneself, or very available, readily available to oneself. So there you are sort of developing a way of life, you are living a way of life, so that these insights become your own. And it is a kind of a complete change of one's life, because it is not the same person who started meditation is now living, but there's a significant behavioral changes have happened in oneself. So therefore, even in this first Anapanasati technique has a very broad scope. And even in the Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha says, in this single kammatthana, single object, can be used even to develop Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana, and Dhammanupassana. So therefore, even though this Anapanasati in Satipatthana Sutta only referred at the Kayanupassana section, one can even develop it in order to understand Vedananupassana, in order to understand Chittanupassana, and in order to understand Dhammanupassana. So therefore, this Anapanasati is one of the very strong meditation technique, and it has many benefits and fairly deep or profound insights. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. I now open the session for questions.
Thank you, Banche. So one of the first questions is regarding how Western mindfulness differs from Satipatthana practice. Stage one is establishing simple mindfulness only, and that's the Western practice. Please explain again how the stages 2 and 3 are included in the deep practice as taught by the Buddha, which includes atapi and sampajano.
Yeah, actually that is the most important part of this whole sutta. So first of all, we have to establish mindfulness so that we all can accept. But mere establishment of mindfulness is not the goal. So in the Buddha's technique, there are further 2 steps, and once mindfulness is established, so on which mindfulness is established, we have to sort of examine what is really happening there. What is the real nature of that? So we have to do this examination. We have to do this scrutiny. We have to do this investigation. Now, as a result, we are able to more and more understand the nature of that phenomena. Now, we were discussing breath. Now, once the establishment of mindfulness has happened, now mind may not shift towards the past or the future. Now, mind may continuously stay within the breath. And while mindfulness is there, now we have to closely look at the breath. What are the characteristics of the breath? And there the insights are possible. There you will understand the complete up and down of the breath, complete in and out of the breath. Complete picture of the breath is available to you. And whole behavior is evident to you. And this behavior is common not only to the breath, to whatever the conditioned phenomena, this common behavior is available. Now, this breath has the nature to arise and pass away. This inhalation, exhalation, or all these minute level inhalation, exhalation, or when that inhalation, exhalation simply fades away and once it becomes a kind of a very minute level sensation, even that have the arising and passing away nature. So these are the insights possible, and that further leads to sort of understanding of Paticca-samuppada, the cause and effect relationship, and to break away the compactness. And we thought that there's a person here, there's a being here, I am meditating. So that is how we started. But later, all these compactness or compactness view going to be blurred, all the boundaries going to be blurred. So likewise, various potential insights are there in the second stage. And when these insights are happening, they are sort of eye-opening insights. So one is to, so they actually invite you to live according to them, to internalize them. So they are the path is required. You can't do it while doing various mishaps, various immoral things. You have to get on to a moral aspect. You have to maintain fair amount of morality. You have to maintain fair amount of wisdom. Your view has to be corrected. And you have to maintain mindfulness. You have to maintain concentration. So likewise, Sila Samadhi Panya has to be lived. It is not simply know, but you have to live according to Sila Samadhi Panya. So the path has to be internalized. The path has to be practically lived. So that is where the Noble Eightfold Path comes. Yeah, back to you, Jennifer.
Okay, thank you, Bente. And sorry, for any newcomers to this group, you may ask a question by raising your hand, and or you can submit them to me anonymously. So, Bente, the next question is feeling of mind, emotions included, under Vedana Nupassana or Chitta Nupassana? Thank you.
Actually, it is how we look at it. Because of various emotions, there may be pleasurable feelings. There may be painful feelings. So you can look at the feelings as well. And on the other hand, if you are able to directly watch the mind, you can understand how we are weaving these emotions. How we are adding various thoughts, little parts of thoughts. So ultimately it becomes kind of an emotion. It is not that immediately an emotion happens, but we do a little bit of thinking. We do a little bit of proliferation, adding, constructing. So that will make us emotional. Suppose you are listening to a song. So at that time, the first step may be, it may be really sort of a fantastic song, very wonderful song. So you start to enjoy it and you really feel the pressure. So at that very stage, you probably may be able to understand the feeling if your mindfulness is well established. But assume that your mindfulness is weak. Now what we do is, so we start to sort of enjoy that song. We are adding our likes and dislikes to that song. We also start to sing that song. And now various emotions are popping up. Now, at that time, probably you can even understand that emotions. And now the pleasure is become intense. Even now you can understand that pleasurable feelings. So there are many possibilities are available. And either you can directly watch the mind and understand various thinking or thoughts, how we are adding, constructing, so that ultimately sort of you are overwhelmed by emotions, or you can understand various feeling tones. So both possibilities are there. It depends on to which you give the emphasis. Back to you.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
So I would like to, for the next question, invite Chief Devi to please ask the question directly.
Thank you. Bhante, now in my personal practice, I do the Anapanasati, and I do get very light and develop samadhi sort of fairly quickly. And then at that time, Bhante, I have a lot of preti and then sukha also. And at that stage, when the mind is really calm, I just look at my breath, the in-breath and the out-breath, like what you're saying, and I observe that. And then I, not that I realize, I mean, I just know, I suppose, that it's arising and passing away. And then I also, maybe I'm thinking, I'm not sure, it's because of cause and effect or, as well. Otherwise, it won't happen like that, because I'm not forcing it, it's just happening. And in the same way, the feelings also, it's the same, you know, it arises and passes away. So I can see that as an observer. And then I possibly think that this is due to a cause. Because of the cause, there is an effect, and this is the effect. So is that right, Bhante, the way I go?
Yeah, basically, when various pleasurable sensations are happening, say various piti, rupture is happening, actually you have to look at them objectively. If you refer Anapanasati Sutta, so in the fifth state, Buddha says, piti patisangvedi asasisamiti sikkati, sukha patisangvedi asasisamiti sikkati. So there Buddha refers that one has to know feeling as feelings. Like in Vedananupassana, you directly know the nature of the feelings. You are not attached to them, or you are not resisting them. You are able to come out of the feeling. You are able to step back from the feeling and watch it. Watch it objectively. So then these feelings helps you to understand the real nature of the causal phenomena. So that is prone to insights.
And then, Bhante, I mean, I just go, I don't direct myself, I just sort of continue the way it comes. So then sometimes it goes into the mind also.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's correct. And I look at the mind, and then I know that there is no, you know, no ill will or sensual pleasures or karma or restlessness and body and those five hindrances.
Yeah.
So I just say to myself, that there's none of these things there. So is that also correct?
Yeah, it is correct. Basically, that is how Anapanasati Sutta Buddha slowly bringing us. So first we are establishing mindfulness and we are dealing with the Kayanupassana. And then we are slowly, naturally bringing to the Vedananupassana. And once various feelings have faded away, so we can clearly look at the mind. So there we basically have to allow mind to behave as it like. So we should not hold the mind strongly. We should not hold the mind effortfully. Rather, we have to relax the mind. We have to release our grip. So that if necessary, mind can even wander. So exit on, but because we are not afraid, because we now know what is mindfulness. We now have a sort of base of mindfulness. And while being there, we allow the mind to play. We allow the mind to distract. We allow the mind to, if it like, it can distract. So there we can understand to which it has gone, or what are the defilements arising, what are the hindrances arising. So likewise, we have to release our grip, we have to remove our strong holding. Rather, we are being in a very relaxed attitude and allow the mind to wander if it likes. And when it is wander, we are not being carried away by that thought. We are not being caught up by that thought. Rather, we are able to look at the thought objectively. There we can understand, okay, even a thought has kind of a nature of arising and the nature of passing away.
But during this process, also, Bhante, when I'm doing, there's a lot of energy.
Right.
So I just stopped. So it goes from one to another, like there's a lot of energy and there's a lot, then there are waves of breathing. So it like moves, so I don't go to interfere. I just watch the whole process. So is that correct?
Can you explain what are these energies?
So lot of vibrations like Bhante,
right.
With the Preeti, it says right. That all over, like the energy particles, like and with the Preeti, Bhante.
Yeah, so actually we can refer as Preeti. So actually Preeti can manifest in many different ways. In books, say for example, A Path of Purification, Visuddhi Magga, there are 5 categories of Preeti are referred. So it may be very minute kind of Preeti, it may be sort of a waves like Preeti, it may be even very intense Preeti. So likewise, there are many levels of Preeti available. Only thing is, we are not afraid of them, we are able to look at them objectively. we are not attached into them either.
No.
Yeah. So you can observe all of these, all vibrations, all waves, whatever the pleasurable feelings, you can observe objectively, because more we observe, more we can understand the real nature of this. So observation is the key thing where you are able to sort of contribute more and more towards the wisdom.
So this is how we can just continue and hopefully we'll develop wisdom along the path.
Yes, exactly. Because it is not possible for us to sort of impose wisdom or to import to import wisdom. Rather, we are preparing the background. We do the observation, very unbiased observation, equanimous observation, and we are simply maintaining that. Then the process itself is prone to give enough wisdom. I mean, it has the potential to give sort of the insights.
So, it's just a matter of just continuing.
Exactly.
Like this.
Yeah. Now, say for example, just to give you a simile, suppose you are growing a mango tree. I don't know, in US you have mangoes? I think you may have. So you may protect it. You may, if necessary, you can add little fertilizer. You can put some water. And likewise, you are sort of facilitating the growing. But you have an intention to get the mango fruits. But you can't force the tree to give you mango fruits. Rather, you can simply prepare the background. You can simply prepare the environment so that the tree will give you mango fruits when the necessary causes are available. Something like that. Very much such kind of a natural process is available in our mind as well.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. What is the next step when the breath becomes minute and only feels there is something happening? Just keep paying attention to it or start paying attention to feelings or thoughts?
Yeah, I think if you are able to keep your attention on this minute feeling, that's all right. Because now you can't distinguish whether this is in-breath or out-breath, but kind of a sensation is there, kind of an indication is there that something is going on. And now you are carefully observing on this sensation. And even that will tell you this common characteristics. And these sensations may rapidly arising and passing away, and there you can very vividly can understand this arising and passing away, and if it is possible, then you can continue with that. Assume that it completely faded away. You can't now you can't now feel it at all, but there are maybe various sensations available within the body, maybe itching sensations, maybe little pains or pleasurable feelings or whatever it is. And there you now can observe and to sort of, with them, you can now contribute towards the wisdom. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. And then for the next question, I'd like to invite Chandima to ask directly.
Chandima.
Chandima, can you unmute your microphone and
yes.
Okay.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you very much for the explanation. I just wanted to ask a few questions about my meditation. When the in-breath goes in, I can feel subtle energies arising, and then a lot of my experience is related to these subtle energies which I feel within the body, and then there is realization that there's no, these energies arise on their own and they fade away. So when I tune with that, it kind of, as you explained, it gets very refined, and sometimes it those subtle energies become very quiet. But then they arise by themselves on its own. Again, sometimes those energies become really intense. So it's kind of like a cycle during a sitting. What happens is this real quietening of the breath, and then it becomes really gross, and again it becomes subtle. So the more and more I realize that there is very little control I have about this rising and falling away, or quietening and getting a rough feeling. Not under my control, but what I do is just observe. Is that the right practice?
Yes, you are correct. Because what you have explained is the sort of experiential insights. It is not that immediately by single observation you get insights. But more and more you observe with a very neutral, really equanimous, fairly concentrated, focused mind, then the behavior of the nature, behavior of the real nature of whatever the phenomena is evident to us. So they all are telling us the same story. So what you have explained now is that story. So is
it? That's what I experienced during the day as well.
Yeah.
And then I see a very, very, very similar
yes.
Phenomenon happening throughout the day.
Yes.
And in my body, I can even feel very subtle, perhaps chemical changes happening. I don't want to kind of give it a name, but for example, in the stomach area, I can feel a lot of agitation sometimes.
Yes.
And, that's.
Yeah, that's correct. So basically, this whole body is like a factory. Now, we call it as my body, this is beautiful, this is a male body, female body, likewise, we give a lot of names. But ultimately, when we are looking at it very closely, so it's very much like a series of processes going on, and they are really interconnected, helping each other, contributing each other, and maybe sometimes troublesome, maybe sometimes they are in harmony. So likewise, a complete mess in a way. So if when things go mess up, then we feel not well, so we feel ill. But when they are coordinating well, then we feel all right, I am well. So, but internally what we have is so many processes, so much as you mentioned, it's like a factory. So more we understand that, so we lose that attachment, we lose the grip, we lose the compactness view, the gana sanya. Previously we were thinking it is a single thing, a one unit, but now we understand it is not. It is a complete system. It's a complete series of processes, and there you lose the sort of the attachment, you lose the grip, and now the mind slowly gives it up, and even the whole body can even sort of break into pieces. That is also even possible.
Could you please kindly explain how we develop chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, how do we invite Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana into this observational experience?
Yeah, actually, you are now fairly getting on well in Kayanupassana. Now, if you are trying to sort of force yourself get into the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, then you are missing out. So therefore, I mean, don't force yourself get onto the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana. Take as much as advantage from Kayanupassana, because you are doing really well on Kayanupassana right now. So therefore, don't put any doubts or don't be in a big hurry to jump to any other stages. When time comes, you may naturally get on to that stage. We should not control even the meditation. At the beginning, we may have little control. Now, suppose if the mind shift to past, we may be bringing it back. When it shift to future, we may bring it back. So that such a kind of a control may be available. But later, we have to allow the meditation to happen. So therefore, don't force yourself to go to Chittanupassana or Dhammanupassana. And again, while we are discussing the whole Satipatthana Sutta, so this information may be available to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante. Actually, looks like the hand was unraised. So that was the last question that I've received, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay, then. So I think we have spent more than 1 hour, and we started Satipatthana Sutta, and very interesting Sutta, directly connected with our own practice. So therefore, we can get a lot of insights, a lot of guidance from this sutta. And I think I'll upload the sutta teaching, this recording, and this what I have used as the teaching material. And you can further get the benefit from that. And with that, I'll conclude today's teaching, and we'll share the merits as to every being, all the beings. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanam. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bhummaṭṭhā devānāgā mahiddikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanam. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bhummaṭṭhā devānāgā mahiddikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu mam param. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Sataṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Sataṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Sataṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.